For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is February 12th, and we are in Derech Hashem Chelek Gimel Perek Sheni, and this has to do with the Shemos and Kishuf. So using the Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMefarash, and also Kishuf, and all the types of things that you find in Mitzrayim, like the Chartumim and all of that we spoke about. We mentioned last week, that's what we're going to speak about this evening. So he's going to build this up step by step. We know already, before we begin the Shir, that there's such a thing as Kishuf, black magic, even though no one knows how to do it today, but it did exist. It does exist, it just can't be accessed today, but it was able to be accessed in the time of Mitzrayim. And we know that there's also using the Shem HaMefarash to make things happen. We have plenty of examples like that, primarily in the Chumash. What's the first example you have of the use of the Shem HaMefarash in Chumash?
Moshe
Rabbeinu.
Killing the
Mitzri, right? And you have other examples. And there's also a concept, as we'll see, about being Mashbia the Malachim, getting the Malachim to do things for you. So we're going to talk about that as well. But he's going to build it up step by step, as he does in everything else that he speaks about. So the first point he makes is cover something which we've talked about before, which is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and we perceive a physical world, a Gashmi world, and we know there's also Ruchnias, we know we have an Neshama, but that the Gashmi world is connected to the Ruchni world, and that even though we don't physically perceive this, but that every action that we do or not do affects the level of Ruchnias that's above us, which in turn affects the one above that, which in turn affects the one above that, all the way up. There's plenty of levels all the way up, and that rearranges things because of our actions, and then because of the rearrangement, then there is a hashpa, there is an influence that comes all the way back down and affects us down here. And it's a constant interface of what's going on. We're the ones changing things because only we have free will, they don't, but there's a constant flux both here and there because of our choices. We don't have any practical, there's nothing practical about that we can apply because we don't perceive what's happening over there. But we have to know that it is happening. And that will help explain some of what he's going to describe over here. Now, our neshama is within our bodies and it's connected to us. And the neshama, if it would not be connected to a guf, would be have much more mobility, much more free reign, the ability to range throughout the Ruchni worlds, whatever that means. But because it's connected to us, it's limited, at least for the time being, as long as we are alive. We already spoke about last week that there is a time that the neshama is able to have a little bit more mobility, a little bit more free range than it does normally. When is that?
Sleeping.
When a person is sleeping. When a person is sleeping, then it is able to move around a little bit more. It has a little bit more mobility, a little more connection to what's going on upstairs, which sometimes affects us, sometimes it doesn't. But Hashem also allowed for there to be other ways that the Ruchnius realm can do things that are, I don't want to say independent of what goes on down here, but not directly linked to what's happening down here. What I mean to say is this. When everything that we do is within a physical world that is run by Teva, the natural world. And the natural world runs according to natural laws. Because the natural world is ordered to run by natural laws, that's why Hashem set it up, therefore all of the Ruchnius realms that are connected to this world are also limited to that. Meaning that if you have, for example, a malach that has some sort of influence or power over fire. So how is fire going to behave? It's going to behave according to natural laws. Because that malach is commanded to deal with fire according to natural laws. Even though according to the ability that he was given, a malach is able to do, if he has power over fire, he can make fire do whatever he wants it to do, but Hashem doesn't let him. Hashem tells him, this is the way you have to run fire. Fire naturally is going to burn things. It's naturally going to need oxygen. It's naturally going to go, heat is going to rise. Whatever the natural laws of fire are, the malach or the malachim that are so to speak, in charge of fire, they are bound by those rules. But there are times that Hashem allows the, I don't want to only say malachim, it seems like there's other types of forces out there, but he allows them to act without being hemmed in by natural law. And he will let them do that. Now, when does he allow them? It's not happenstance. It's very specific. His rules and regulations are very specific. But there are times when he allows those forces to break free of their natural containment because they're connected to this world. Obviously, he's trying to explain what happens when there is a nes, when there's a miracle. That's outside of natural law. Those are some of the examples when that happens. But nisim happen without, we can't make nisim happen. I can't just snap my fingers and make a miracle happen. If Hashem wants a miracle to happen, it will happen. If he doesn't, it doesn't. Open miracles haven't happened in thousands of years. But they can in theory, and they have happened in history. Kriyas Yamsuf, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, we know that there are open miracles that have happened. They don't generally happen. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they were daily occurrences. You went to the Beis HaMikdash, you saw all kinds of regular miracles. Now, you don't have that. But those breaking free of those forces' containment because they're connected to here doesn't happen because we just decide it should happen. It happens because Hashem decides it should happen based on whatever rules He set up. However, Hashem also embedded within creation the ability for human beings to be able to affect those rare occurrences when the forces upstairs are going to break free of their containment down here, and they will be able to act outside of natural law. Now, the parameters governing that are very complicated. It's not like, well, you know, you might stumble across it and make it happen. You know, oh, I didn't realize that. I pushed this button, now all of a sudden the we're going to create all kinds of miracles. There are all kinds of parameters, and they're complex. Just as anything in this world, anything which is a complicated machinery, is going to be complex in how you get it to work, the same thing with these forces. In order to access this ability to break them free of what bounds them to this world, it's going to be complicated. Just to give you an example, a mashal, which will, I think, help us with this. have you ever seen a child who, for the first time, takes an interest in you're driving a car. And the child, you know, you make a joke, the child will drive now. I just did this with my 4-year-old, you know, she'll drive to school today. So so she sits in the driver's seat, she grabs the wheel, right? She has no idea what to do. If you think about it, when you get in a car, the only piece of the car that you can intuitively know how it works is the steering wheel. It's the only part that is obvious. Since the wheel turns, so it makes sense that when you turn it, you go one way, you turn the other way, you go the other way. But the ignition, the gear shift, the gas pedal, the brake pedal, the parking brake, the windshield wipers, the lights, None of that you would figure out just by looking at it. Only because we know cars. That's why we figure it out. Sometimes you get in a car, you don't know where the parking brake is, and you've got to figure it out. Right? Sometimes you don't know where the gear shift is. Sometimes it's here, sometimes here, whatever. It's right? Because there's no natural reason why it should. You wouldn't just look at it, oh, of course. It doesn't make sense. It's only because we're used to it. We understand how it works. But if you have no idea, it's actually very complicated. You get in a car, you sit down, and you know nothing about it. And you're given a set of keys. Okay, first of all, you got to figure out, where does this key go? Why should it be on the steering wheel? And we know where it goes, or on the dashboard. But you got to look around. Why should it be on the right side? Maybe it's on the left side. Maybe it's on your seat. Maybe it's on the ceiling. It's not natural, right? So if someone has never seen a car before, they got to find where this key goes. You put the key in. Now what? You turn it. Well, you know, it turns both ways. Which way do you turn it? Okay, so you turn it one way, nothing happens. Some lights go on, but the car doesn't start. Turn it the other way. How many times should you turn it? Click, click, click. How far do they go? Oh, finally, you turn it all the way. And you hold it down over there. Well, now what? Oh, I'm supposed to let it go a little bit? Bounce back a little bit? I didn't know that. It's not so simple. And then, even after you get the car on, so now what? So, okay, nothing's happening. To figure out that there are pedals, and the pedals, one of them makes the car move, the other one stops the car, that the brake, the parking brake might be on, which even though I'm pushing the pedal, nothing's happening, and to know about gears, to know that I have to shift something to move it into, right? It's complex, and what order things go in, it's complex, let alone moving changing the mirrors and the seat and all that other stuff. It's all very complicated. If that's true about a car, the same is true, but only much more complex about this. It's true that Hashem has embedded in creation the ability to access these things, but it's extremely complex. And it's not like, you know, you're just going to push some buttons, all of a sudden things are going to start happening. Moreover, it's not like Hashem embedded in creation that if you go through certain steps, you now can do whatever you wish. You can make the wind blow and the fire and water, and you can do it. It's not like that. There are specific tasks that can be done. Again, just like is with a car. A car can go forward and go backward. It can't go sideways, at least not except for smart cars, but really, it can't fly up in the air. It can only go on the ground. It can't go in water. There are rules governing what it can do. Same thing over here, that although there may be access to some of these things, but they are very specifically bounded by rules, even when they break away from the way that they are bounded by the rules of this world. They still are very, very mugbal. They're very bounded. So, how do those things happen? So, there are three ways that it can happen. Three ways. One is by using the name of Hashem, the Shem HaMeforosh. The Shem HaMeforosh, which is a big machlokus, what the Shem HaMeforosh is. We know the Shem HaMeforosh is Yud Kei Vav Kei. But what it means to use the Shem HaMeforosh, how do you pronounce it? How do you say it? You're not allowed to say it normally. What exactly does it mean to say it? Is it with 72 letters? Is it with 42 letters? Is it with 4 letters? Is it with 12 letters? There's all kinds of discussion about what it means to use the Shem HaMeforosh. We know the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur used the Shem HaMeforosh, but we don't know exactly what that means. But Klal Yisrael heard the Shem HaMeforosh on Har Sinai. So there was a time when we all heard it. And there are individuals who were aware of the Shem HaMeforosh throughout the centuries. Not now, but throughout the centuries there were. The Shem HaMeforosh has immense power. Since the source of all power is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no independent power other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. All power comes from Him. And He ascribed to Himself a name. When one says His name, one is naturally going to be tapping in to something greater than himself or herself. Now, that depends heavily on the circumstances under which someone says HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. If one says it with the proper Kedusha, the proper Tahara, the person says it in a proper place, at a proper time, Kohen Gadol, on Yom Kippur, Beis HaMikdash, right? If it's all done in the proper way, it will pack a lot more power than if one says it flippantly, without any thought, without any preparation or anything like that. But the stating of Hashem's name properly has a lot of power. And it has the power, when done in a particular way, to break the kochos of the ruchnius world away from the limitations of the gashmius world. He writes, it also has the ability to break our neshamos away from our guf and bring us into the other world, not death, but bring us away from our bodies and into the other world. That's why you find on Yom Kippur, when we read about the Asara Harugei Malchus, so he says he's going to kill them all, and they turn to who? They turn to Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol to ask him to find out if this was a Gzeira Min HaShamayim, and what does he do? It says, he says the Shem HaMeforash. The language is Besiludim. He says the Shem HaMeforash, and his neshama goes up to Shamayim, and he's able to converse with the Malachim to find out, is this a Gzeira? Are we supposed to accept this sitting down, or are we supposed to fight it? And they say, this is a Gzeira from Hashem, accept it. And they do. And they're all martyred. So that's an example of using the Shem HaMeforash not to make miracles happen, but for his neshama to pull away from his guf and go up into Shamayim and have a shmooze. Talk over what's going on with whoever's upstairs. That has that ability when done properly. Moshe Rabbeinu used the Shema Mefarash to kill the Mitzri. That's what he used it for. We have to presume that Moshe Rabbeinu knew how to use it, which is fascinating, because Moshe Rabbeinu had not yet had the episode at the Sneh. There was no burning bush yet. So to have known the Shema Mefarash and how to use it at that time, he would have been 40 years old. That's remarkable. Be that as it may, he did. I think he was 40 years old. So he did. We have other examples of the use of the Shem HaMeforash. How did they get Yosef's bones, Atmos Yosef, out of the Nile River? Well, he didn't say it.
He wrote it.
He wrote it down on a piece of metal, or a piece of whatever it is, and threw it into the Nile, and the thing came up. It said, Alei Shor. That's what it said. And then, what happened to that, according to one Medrash anyway, what happened to that Tas?
Didn't it go to the Eber Shoftim?
Before that. You're right, before that, though. Okay, so they according to one explanation, Micha got it, took it with him into the midbar, and then when Aaron threw the gold into the fire, he threw this in, and out popped the ego hazav. So the shame there also defied the parameters of this world, but there it ended up being something bad. The mekalel in the Chumash, the mekalel, it says he stated Hashem's name and he was Mekalel. He said the shame and he was Mekalel. And he was killed for that. He was put to death for that. There he used Hashem's name in a terrible way and he was put to death. But we have many other examples of it in Nach. The Gemara says, for example, when David HaMelech was digging the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash, you know the story, what happened over there? He got to the Evan Shasiyah and uncovered it, and water came out and began to flood everything and was going to flood the entire world. And Achitofel, he didn't know what to do. And Achitofel made a kal v'chomer. Achitofel said, if Hashem said, you should erase my name in order to make shalom between husband and wife with the sota, so to save the whole world, all the more so. So they wrote the Shema Mefarosh on something or other, threw it in, and it stopped. You also have that David HaMelech, towards the end of his life, was being chased by Yishbi Benov. Yishbi Benov is who?
Shimi Ben-Gera?
Not Shimi Ben-Gera. Yishbi Benov was the brother of Goliath. Goliath had three brothers. One of them was Yishbi Benov. Yishbi Benov was trying to kill David. And the Gemara tells the only word you can use is bizarre, a bizarre story of which he got a hold of David HaMelech and threw him up in the air and put his sword underneath so David would land on the sword. And the Gemara says that Avishai ben Tsruya came to help David and used the Shema Mefarash to help David. David should not fall on the sword and to get away from Yishbi Benov. The Gemara also tells us that Yeshaya HaNavi, you know how Yeshaya HaNavi died? He was killed. He was murdered by?
I'm guessing Jews.
Your mother would be very upset about all this. He was killed by Menashe, by Melech Menashe. That's who killed him. So he was killed. Menashe got a hold of Yeshaya and judged him and brought up trumped up charges against Yeshaya. Yeshaya decided it was not worth it to try to defend himself, that there was no way he would defend himself. So it says he said the Shema HaMefarash and he was absorbed into a tree. He entered inside of a tree. He just was put inside the trunk of a tree.
So Menashe or Yeshaya?
No, Yeshaya. Mm-hmm. That's what the Gemara says. Then Menashe cut down the tree and killed him that way. That's what the Gemara says in Yevamos. The point is, the Shema Mefarash has kochos, it has power. You have to know how to access it, but it has power. And this is what it does. It enables both our neshamas and the various kochos of the ruchni kochos to pull away from the limitations of being attached to the physical world. But again, there are parameters. You can't just do it willy-nilly, and you are not able, you wouldn't stumble across it. You'd have to know what you're doing. It's like the Sabbath mode ovens. If you don't know how to do it, you won't just stumble across it. You got to know what to push and how to push it. They don't want you to be able to stumble across it. So you can't. You won't just happen upon it. And at the same time, if you know how to do it, there are significant limitations in how it works. But there is another method, and that is to be mashpia the malachim. See, the first method requires that the person using the Shema Mefarash has some element of Kedusha, Tara, otherwise it's not going to work. In the case of Egal Azav, it wasn't him saying it, he was using the tas that it was written on. It was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's got to come from some source of Kedusha and Tara in order for it to have any to work at all. But with the Malachim, that's not so. There are Malachim that are in charge of various things. There's a Malach in charge of water, and a Malach in charge of the sun, a Malach in charge of the moon, a Malach in charge of rain, a Malach in charge of fire, everything. There's Malachim in charge of all kinds of things. And if you know how to use the Shema Mefarash, and you know which Malach is affected by what, you can get the Malach to use what he's in charge of the way you want it to. The way Ram Chal explains it is that once Hashem has embedded this in Briyas HaOlam, it's like any other utensil, any other kli. If I have a hammer, I could use a hammer to bang in a nail, and I can use a hammer to bang someone over the head. But I have a hammer. So if I have access to this ability to make the malach of fire use fire in a certain way, I can use it for good, I can use it for bad, if I know how to do it. So this is another thing that is embedded in creation. This one is not dependent on doing it nicely or properly or with a mitzvah. I mean, you have to know how to do it, which no one today knows how to do. Again, you're not going to stumble across it. You're going to have to know a lot of different parameters and rules. But you don't have to be a tzaddik for this one. Even a rasha is able, if he knows how to do it, is able to access this method of using the malachim. We have a Rashi in Eicha that says this. Rashi in Eicha tells us, it's in Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis of Eicha. The Pasuk says, Bila Hashem lo chamal, Hashem has destroyed, cut down, and has not had mercy. Eis kol na'os Yaakov, all the settlements of Yaakov. Haras be'evraso mivitzrei vas Yehuda, he has destroyed with his anger the strongholds of Yehuda. Higia la'aretz, he has knocked them down to the ground. Chileil mamlacha v'sareha, he has nullified, or again, knocked down, destroyed her kings and her officials. Mamlacha v'sareha. So the simple meaning is, Rashi says, Elu Yisrael. Mamlacha v'sareha means all the Jewish people. Shoyukruim mamlachas kanim. We're called mamlachas kanim. But Rashi says, v'sareha, medrash agada yesh, there's a medrash, Elu sarim shalmala. This is referring to not the officials down here, they're referring to the officials upstairs. Shehichlifam, that he, Hashem, switched them around. Hamamuna al ha'or, mina al hamayim, the one who was in charge of fire, he put them in charge of water. Vehechlif kol hamamunim, and he switched around all of the various malachim who were in charge of various things. Why? Vavishahayu berisha Yisrael, because they were amongst the evil people of Yisrael, ba'alei shem ha'meforash, those who know the shem ha'meforash. Ubotchim heim, and they relied sheyashbiu esari mala, that they would enforce, they would cause the officials upstairs lahatzilam, to save them me'esh umimayim umicheref, from fire, water, and the sword. So they said, I don't have to worry about what Hashem is going to do to me, because I have the power over these malachim, I can make them do whatever I want them to do, and they'll save me. So achshav, and now kishaya mashbia esar ha'esh bishmo, when this Rasha would try to get the official in charge of fire to do what he wanted him to do using his name, v'hu meshiv, that Malach would answer, Eimem shalazu biyadi, I'm no longer in charge of this, v'chen kulam, and also all of them. So each Malach would say, sorry, you got the wrong guy. And then it wouldn't work. And therefore their power didn't work. So Hashem switched around which malach is in charge of what, and therefore even those who knew how to access the malachim no longer could, because Hashem changed the rules. So you see that this koach is not limited to tzaddikim. Rishayim were able to make use of it. And you also see that the way Hashem stopped them was not by saying, okay, it doesn't work. He stopped them by changing around the rules. He made it that the gas pedal became the brake, and the brake became the gas pedal. And he made it, if you put it in drive, that's really in neutral. And if you put it in park, it's really in reverse. He just switched it all around, so then anybody gets in the car doesn't know what they're doing anymore. That's how he handled them. But that's an example that you see about this second way of accessing these forces. The third way is with kishuf, is with the use of what they call koach hatuma. Now here we're talking about something which can be accessed again by anybody. Again, you have to know what you're doing, but it can be accessed by anybody. And here, this is accessed specifically by people who are rishayim. It's not accessed by tzaddikim. See, the first one, the Shema Meforash, is only accessed by Tzaddikim. The middle one, the one that accesses the Malachim, that anybody could theoretically access. And then you have this third one, which is what we would call loosely black magic. the Chatumim in Mitzrayim, they were able to do this. They knew the art of doing it, and they were able to do it. Mitzrayim was full of Kishuf. It was full of this stuff. And they were able to access it. They're not tapping in to the Shem HaMafarash, and they're not tapping in to Malachim. They are tapping in to other types of forces that exist in the Ruchnius realm that are quote-unquote evil forces. Now we have to be careful over here and make sure we understand what we mean by evil forces. We don't believe the way that the culture around us believes, that there are evil forces that are kind of against Hashem, and they're kind of in competition with Hashem. Of course, that would be kfira to say such a thing. There's no such thing. All forces are controlled and created by and completely under the dominion of Hashem. There's no such thing as independent power for anything. But Hashem did create the ability for there to be evil, and particularly when we choose wrong and we do averus chas v'shalom, that creates evil forces upstairs also. And those evil forces can also be accessed. They're not accessed through using the Shem HaMafarash, which is an element of Kedusha. They are accessed with some method, which I personally am not aware of. No one today really knows how to do it. But they're accessed through some method that is Tamei. And those are called Kalach HaTumah. Some of them are described in the Gemara, with the way some things are accessed is through the use of dead bodies and the use of a graveyard and things of that nature. And some are accessed in other ways. It's even if you read through the Gemara, it's not going to help you. It's going to give you some inkling of what's going on, but the Gemara doesn't include all the details, and it's not something anybody knows today. Those kochas can also be accessed in theory, and it's wrong to do so because the Torah says it's asur to do it, and it's using kalach hatuma. There is a machlokas in the Gemara: are non-Jews prohibited from accessing those kochos or not? It's a machlokas. Whether kishuf is usher for a non-Jew. Some say kishuf is part of the seven mitzvot of Noach. That's what some say. So you'll say, what do you mean? I know all seven, and it's not one of them. Do you know all seven? You do? Let's go through Alice.
Erechai.
Yeah, Beis.
Erechas Hashem.
Okay, Gimel.
Gedol.
Yeah, Dalit.
Eden.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, the three Yeragoyah.
Okay, believe in Hashem, murder, and right. Okay, good, and Gilead Reis. Good. There, some say, some add to that list. It's not clear in the Gemara whether they're adding or whether they are switching. See, we always say Sheva, Mitzvah Zeinoach. But the truth is, there are up to 11 that are listed. So it's unclear to me when the Gemara lists, when the Gemara says different opinions and says, you know, this one holds of this, this one holds of that, whether they are substituting one for another, or they're saying there's more than seven. There's 8 or 9 or 10. Some say that non-Jews are not allowed to do Klayim. Now, not Klayim of Shatnez. Shatnez for sure they can do. But crossbreeding animals, and the different types, some types of grafting of fruits. Some say that. Some include kishuf in this list. There's different opinions of what to include and not to include. At any rate, so there is a machlokas about kishuf, whether a non-Jew is allowed to access them. But whatever it is, accessing them does involve koach hatuma. It is an unholy work. Again, you got to know how to do it. Now, as he writes, even though, let's take the first method of the Shem HaMafarash. I think he says this about only the first method. Let me just see if he says it about both the first and second, or just the first. No, and the second as well. He says that getting the Ruchnius powers to do something different than what they're supposed to be doing, because you can access this method, it still means that you're kind of intruding on a realm that isn't yours. You're intruding on the Ruchnius realm. You're going someplace that a human being really, I don't want to say should not be going, but needs to be going with a certain degree of humility, shall we say. So he says that those forces are closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than we are. So when I make use of this appliance here, so this appliance, this physical appliance, it's right here, it's in my realm. But to go into a different realm and make use of those forces, utensils, appliances, whatever you want to call them, so that's not something that a person should do lightly. As he says, it's like using the scepter of the king. Being mishtamish b'sharvito shel melech. So it is a chutzpah for a person to go there and use it without being on the level of a person who has the right to enter into that realm. So he says a person could do it, but if they don't belong there, they will eventually be punished for it. It is wrong to do it. Now, just like with any avera, you're not punished immediately. A person does an avera, it could take years before they're punished for it. Baruch Hashem, we have time to do teshuva. But going into that realm without the proper preparation, without the proper mindset, etc., is also treading where we should not be going. And that is also considered to be a form of an avera, and a person will eventually, if they don't do teshuva, will have to pay the price for having gone there. So it's not just that it's complex to access, and it's not just that it requires a certain degree of kedusha and tahara to get to some of it, but it's also that a person has to be worthy of doing it. You'll ask me, what does that mean? I guess that when any of us know the art, then we can ask that question. Until then, it's an academic question. So Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do it. Now, you understand that the direction we're going over here is we're moving towards, we started with, like last week, with the fact that our ruchni selves separates from ourselves at night, to a certain degree. And here we see ways of separating even more dramatically, like Yishmael Kohen Gadol, and making use of kochos that are really not normally able to be made use of. But he hasn't yet gotten to where the real power is. When I say power, I use the term loosely. And that's going to be Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah. That's where the real, power is the wrong word, where the real access is. Where the real access is going to be to Ruchnius, to my neshama, being able to act independently of my guf, to not be limited by my guf, and to be exposed to much greater and broader things. Here we're touching on that. But when we get to the next parak, which is going to be Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah, that's where we're really going to see how that works. Because people misunderstand what Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah is. And that's where the neshama is literally going to be able to throw off the shackles of the limitations of our guf and be connected in all kinds of unbelievable ways to the Olam HaRuchni while we are still alive. So that's where we're going. He's building up to that. And that, of course, is all going to be good. There's nothing bad about that. If a person is Zelcha to Ruach HaKodesh and to Nevuah, that's all great. Here we're talking about using a force that does exist, but that either you got to be really unbelievable to use it, or you're overstepping your bounds by using it, or it's outright tumah. So that here we're kind of getting towards the other discussion. One last point is that we've mentioned this before, but just to be aware that everything we discussed tonight is not the same thing as itzaknine paro. not the same thing as stargazers. Stargazers are not making use, they're not making anything happen. All they're doing is they're interpreting what they're seeing to know some element of what's going to happen in the future. We discussed this in previous weeks as well. That's a totally different thing. They are not making use, they're not tapping into some power that's out there and able to be tapped into. All they're doing is they're reporting what they see. So even though there is an art to that as well, which nobody has today, and even though one could foresee some elements of the future using the stars, it is possible, it does exist. Again, nobody knows how to do it today. But that's not affecting the future. That's only knowing the future. This is talking about affecting things, actually changing things, making things happen. No different than picking up a hammer and banging in a nail. It's accessing certain kochos through these various forms that we're talking about over here. Okay, we'll pause here. I'm not sure if this was I don't know if we're coming out of here more informed or more confused. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.